You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, Joe.
Hour number two of the Sports Hangover. Don't forget tonight, Major League Baseball's All-Star Game. 7 p.m. is first pitch. You can hear all of the coverage on ESPN New Orleans. Following that, Moscone after further review. He was at SEC Media Days. Did you see all the selfies he took from all the different shows he was a guest on? Joining the
Matt
intern?
Moscone?
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, we need to do that.
Sorry, I wasn't at media day.
I'm just saying, just in general, just anywhere around town. What do you think?
You don't need to be into yourself.
No, you don't want to just take a selfie.
Don't be narcissistic.
You should take a selfie today.
No,
of you being on the show.
I don't like.
And then I'll take a selfie of me in the parking lot.
I'm one of the guys who
you can take a selfie.
So you're going to model. So you're just going to get up on the car. You know,
I'm here today.
I'm one of the guys who wants to get selfies banned off of Twitter.
Do you?
Yeah, I think selfies don't belong on Twitter.
Speaking of, do you know what today is?
It's World Emoji Day.
World Emoji Day.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the NFL put out here's the NFL in emojis. Of course, the Saints have the Florida lead.
Yeah, it's nice.
Before the show, I asked Jordan, what's the one emoji? Like, go ahead, tweet it. What's the one emoji?
I can't tweet mine, obviously.
I know yours already. It's the middle finger.
Yeah.
It's clearly, telling everyone number one without using the index finger. Yes, exactly. Which you so astutely taught Jordan the intern really well during OTAs and minicamp.
He's matured since then.
Yeah, he really has. You know, it's interesting. When he's not around, I don't get the double bird yet.
I haven't given it to you yet today.
Since OTA and minicamp. It's actually the last time I've gotten the bird from you.
No, you got it when we were in here watching the soccer game, and then the owner of Argentina flicked off the whole world.
Oh, yes, that's true.
It was the night before Dikembe Mutombo flipped off.
Right. No. It wasn't Dikembe Mutombo. It was Bill Russell.
Bill Russell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley.
Right. And earlier in the day, it was, the guy from Argentina. Maradona.
Diego Maradona,
the double bird to the fans. So, yeah. So then I couldn't chastise my intern for double birding me because, well,
it's a staple to society.
The greatest of all time, arguably, in Bill Russell, in terms of championships, and Diego Maradona, World Cup champion. They're double birding everyone on national TV. So there you go, Sharif. For Jordan the intern, it's definitely that. I mean, his emoji is the emoji of the middle finger.
Is it really?
It's got to be.
That's not the one you use the most. Which one do you use the most?
Ooh. Yeah, for me, it's easy. Mine is the one where you put the palm of your hand on your forehead.
I use that one a lot.
That is always the one
it's easy to go to.
That's my sigh. That's my did you just see that? That's my did you just see that in a bad way? That's probably the one I easily tweet out the most.
I might use the love eyes.
The love eyes?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected that from you.
Yeah. I may not use that as Twitter, though.
What do you use the most? Like when you tweet your friends or your notes? What is it?
I use like almost all of them. Not all of them, of course, but like I use a good amount of them. There's not one I go to.
I just use the love eyes when I talk about Ronaldo.
You like Ronaldo? I have the man crush on Alvin Kamara.
Perfect specimen.
I can talk about Alvin Kamara all day.
I talk about
Steve
Ronaldo.
Nash is mine.
Wow. Steve Nash is yours?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Moving on. Sharif Ichak from Channel 6 is joining us at Sharif WDSU is the way to follow him over on Twitter. He's off today, so why not come on in and chime in with us?
I always wanted to try this radio thing.
It's not bad.
You can wear whatever you want. I have to wear a suit.
Yeah, exactly.
This worked out.
I am not. That would be the one thing. But then again, it's just for when you're on camera. I mean, technically.
Imagine if you had Moscone show and you had to wear a suit.
Yeah.
They'd be like, hey, Gus, you got to wear a suit every day.
Good. Well, the collared shirt, I think.
I don't even like wearing polo shirts.
No?
Nah, I just like wearing those comfortable V-neck
shirts. I'm shocked
it's
not sleeveless. I mean, you came back from the gym.
No,
I like the sleeveless.
Do you have shorts on and then just like a suit whenever you want?
Not anymore. I used to do that at my old job. Can't do that now because we stand up.
Wow.
That's right.
Yeah.
Y'all, when is the last time y'all actually did a sports cast where you're not standing up?
I'm probably on the old set.
Right.
But I don't like sitting down. I'm too fidgety and I move too much. Like right now, I'm moving in circles, sitting in the chair.
Yeah.
It's been years.
It's been years.
Probably since I had my old job in Baton Rouge.
I didn't think about that. That's true.
Yeah.
That's right. I guess we do have to sit down for 3 hours, don't we?
Yeah, we're pretty lazy.
All right, so we were going over a little bit of media days. He was in Atlanta yesterday, obviously. We talked a little bit on Jimbo Fisher. Mark Stoops also spoke in between Ed Orgeron speaking. Some of the things that I just want to go through some of the sound here. We can kind of comment on some of the things that he said. The Joe Burrows thing, recruiting Joe Burrows, again, savior for LSU.
Our meeting on football, and Joe was excellent in there. And I think it's the first time his dad had heard talk football. Steve was running the meeting, obviously, and going through some plays with Joe, some installations that we do, some things that he did at Ohio State, and he was excellent. And we felt that his knowledge of the game, his ability to run the offense, he could be a pro quarterback. He could run the football, extend plays to the feet if he has to. He's very tough. He's a leader. And overall, he's very smart, throws an anticipation and accuracy. We felt that he would add to the quarterback competition that we already have.
And we played a little bit earlier last hour, Sharif, of him saying, look, he wants it to be decided on the field before they head on over to Dallas and take on Miami.
He wants Joe Burrow to, like I said.
He would like Joe Burrow to
say,
win
this
that
comp.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's his job to lose. I'll be shocked if he's not the starting quarterback.
All right, so look, that's obviously something we're going to see somehow because you don't get to see many practices, if any. And it's the same thing. We get to see stretchy time. So it is what it is. We won't know until Miami. I mean, we won't know how good this kid can be or what he can do until Miami in this offense. Two things stood out to me other than Burrow's yesterday. So let's go through it since you were there. Sold us a lot on Ensminger. Lots of Ensminger, left and right, right? From the state of the team to just being excited about Ensminger.
On offense, I'm so excited that Steve Ensminger is our offensive coordinator. As we all know, we took over interim coach. Steve's offense broke 7 school records in 8 games. He spread the ball around. He put the ball in our playmakers' hands in space and let them make plays. Great game day caller, able to make adjustments, game plan. We're excited to have Steve Ensminger, a former LSU Tiger quarterback, to be our offensive coordinator.
All right. Excited about him to have him, and then he was asked a little bit more about him.
The year that we took over, interim coach, I've known Steve. In fact, I was Steve's graduate assistant football coach at McNeese State University on offense, and I've known his ability to lead an offense, his structure, his communication to the players, and the respect that he has. In our first game against Missouri, he set all kind of school records. And he continued to do a great job. And I said to myself that Steve is worthy of the coordinator position at LSU. Circumstances were different when I got the job. I went out trying to get the best coordinator in the league and possible for our football team. It didn't work. And all the while, I was saying, you know what, Steve Ensminger is the guy. And if I have a chance, I'm going to hire him. I have complete confidence in the direction that he's going to lead this offense. He and I are on the same page.
So that's just two bites right there. I hear leadership. I hear we get along. I hear I know what he can do. Game caller on game day, decision maker. I just got the sense and feeling a lot of the reason for that decision to part ways with Matt Canada is getting along with him. Or whoever's going to call the plays, and game day management. Am I wrong in kind of assuming that maybe Coach O felt that that was not the strong suits of Matt Canada?
Oh, they butted heads. They didn't like each other, right? Let's just go ahead and say that. Maybe. He and Ensminger are good friends. They get along. They're on the same page.
I mean, he went through his whole bio.
Yeah. Essentially, they want to run the same exact thing. Like, with both of them have the same thing in mind. So he and Canada obviously were like Baton Rouge and Canada, mm-hmm. They were way out there, different, you know, countries when it came to the offense. Really cheesy there, but that's what it was
what
like.
Did you see what he did there?
Yeah.
Okay, I was making sure you're paying attention, Jordan. Yeah. So this is part of your internship here to learn.
Listen to my cheesy
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Baton Rouge and Canada.
We're paid professionals
yeah.
here.
Yeah. to make cheesy jokes like that.
Attention.
But yeah, they just didn't work out. You could just, the frustration in the middle of the season after losing to Troy.
Right.
And going back to a simple offense, stopped with all the shifting and moving and all that stuff. It just, that looked weird.
Well, again, I mean, when after 3 weeks you have to have a sit down.
Yeah, that's not good.
By the AD.
Imagine if you had
can we get along, guys?
Imagine, I mean, 3 weeks into your job if
no.
you had to sit down after.
Well, again, you already know things is not working out that way.
Gosh, yeah, we're not going to be having you back.
So Coach O then goes on. That was part of the opening statements mm-hmm. that he made yesterday, Sharif. And over the next 2.5 minutes here, this is his, you know, introductory to the SEC media. This is the team that we're going to be taking to the field. Tiger fans.
If you're thinking about what we're going to do at LSU, we're going to be a spread offense, mainly from three wide receiver sets, four wide receiver sets, sometimes five. We're going to be 50-50, throwing the football, running the football. Steve's going to do a great job of that. Some key competition in the fall camp, obviously, is going to be at quarterback. The addition of Joe Burrow has added to the competition that we already have at quarterback. We feel that Justin, Miles, Lowell are three excellent quarterbacks. We're going to let this thing play out and let the best man win. Like I said, we're excited about our young wide receiver core. We're excited about the young freshman we brought in. I feel like we're going to be very strong on the offensive line, led by Garrett Brumfield. Our tremendous guard has a lot of playing experience at LSU, and excited about Damian Lewis, a young offensive guard brought in from junior college that is strong and he's physical. At running back position, we feel like we have two or three outstanding running backs. They haven't proved themselves yet. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Nick Brossette, and I want to see what Chris Curry gets to do. So on offense, we're excited about what's going to go on, excited about everything that's happening with Coach Ensminger and his installation of the offense. On defense, obviously, Dave Aranda has done a fantastic job. We feel like we have the best defensive coordinator in all the land. And you're going to see more of Dave's defense this year, more of a blitzing attacking style. We feel that we have two of the best defensive players in the country returning, in Devin White, linebacker, and Greedy Williams at quarterback. We have a front seven that's going to be able to rotate. We're two deep, led by Rashard Lawrence, who's here with us today, and then Kelavon Chassar, an outside linebacker, who's going to take Arden Key's place. We have to find another cornerback. That cornerback position is going to be excited to see in fall camp. We brought in Terrence Alexander, a graduate transfer from Stanford, who's going to have an opportunity to compete at that position. Calvin Joseph, one of our top signees from the state of Louisiana at cornerback, John Trey Kirkland, and Kerry Vincent. It'll be exciting to see who is going to be that other cornerback. On special teams, I'm excited to have Greg McMahon be able to coach at a full-time position. Last year, he was an analyst, and we're excited about the signee of Cole Tracy. We feel that Cole's the best graduate transfer kicker that we can get out there. We're excited to see him in camp and see what he can do for us and earn the starting spot at the kicker.
There you go. That's kind of like the Cliff Notes version, wasn't it, Sharif, of the Tiger team in short. I mean, these are the top guys on offense per position there, O-line, skill position players. He's excited about the receivers. Let's see who stands out and is the running back. Curry, right? I mean, the freshman there seems to be somebody I think a lot of people say he's going to have the opportunity to get a lot of carries and maybe make some noise there.
That's a position no one's getting redshirted at. They're going to have a lot of players coming in and out.
You
in
see
that position.
That as we go to break, because we've got to bring in Touch 'Em All, Timmy Groves, talk a little baseball, then we'll get back to this bottom of the hour. It's a new redshirt rule.
Four games.
Yeah, and he
talked like
about
that.
He loves that. He
I'd like
loves
too.
The fact that that's the case because you can actually play some players, give them some experience, and after four games, shut them down.
I like it.
You could absolutely, I mean, the first four games of the season, play them.
Do it. You got nothing to lose.
He said last year he had 22 freshmen. He played 20 of them, but he said they hit that freshman wall. And he's like, towards the end and middle of the season, we couldn't play them because they hit that wall. But if you play them more, then.
Is it just the first four games? Or can it be four games?
Four games overall.
That's awesome. That's the rule I really like that they put into place.
Interesting. We'll touch a little bit on that and we'll talk a little bit more, as we said, about Devin White. To me, he's the face of LSU this year, right? I mean, well, again, maybe Burrows, if he comes in and he starts lighting it up. But
let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think right now it's Devin White. Yeah, for sure. Up next, though, it's Touch 'Em All, Tim Grubbs, voice of the Baby Cakes. We'll talk a little MLB All-Star Game, which is tonight, which you can hear right here on ESPN New Orleans. And we'll have all that and more when we come back. You're listening to ESPN New Orleans.
Fly ball, well hit, right center field, and Juan Diaz can touch the ball.
That is the intro for Touch touch them all, Timmy Grubbs. At Mr. Tim Grubbs, the way to follow him over on Twitter. Gus Cattingale, Sharif Oshak, join the intern. Having a chance to talk a little baseball with Tim as the Cakes got back into it after their All-Star break from a week ago and have been home for a little bit. Tim, how are you?
Oh, been great. It was good to be home for an extended period of time. And, you know, we're back on the road now. And it's what's really strange is this whole our All-Star break not matching with the Major League All-Star break. It's, you know, not being able to watch Home Run Derby. And obviously I got caught up on the highlights, you know, right after our game last night. But it's still, you know, it's always been one of the, you know, the must-watch appointment television things for me is to make sure that I'm in front of a set so I can see these guys blast some bombs.
Yeah, at Oklahoma City, getting a win last night, 5-1. It's weird. You take a look at it. It says versus Oklahoma City and then at Oklahoma City today because you're making up a game from earlier in the month.
Yeah, we're actually the home team in game one. So this is going to be, you know, this has only happened a couple of times. We did win a walk-off game in Omaha a few years ago. And it was really cool to see, you know what I mean, have a team walk off in another city in another ballpark. And I hope we get the same thing today. I think it would be, it's fun to watch and it's interesting because the fans really don't know what to do when they see a team, you know, have a game winning hit in the bottom, what would be the bottom of the seventh because it's 2 7-inning games scheduled for today. But it was pretty neat when we saw it in Omaha a few years ago.
Taking on my Iowa Cubbies later on over the weekend before returning back home a week from today against Reno. And then Tacoma for the next couple of games there. So Oklahoma City and Iowa to round out the road trip on Sunday before coming back. Tim, I guess since we last chatted, I mean, not really a lot of games other than Colorado Springs. And really, you split the series there, losing 2 and winning 2.
Yeah, no, the team's been, you know, we've been playing basically 500 baseball of
right.
late. Now, our schedule's been very difficult. We've been playing, we wrap up a 19-day stretch on Thursday here where we played just Colorado Springs and Oklahoma City, where we played nothing but those two teams. Those are the first and second place teams, and they have bounced back and forth out of first and second during this 19-day stretch that we've been playing the two of them. If we beat one of them, the other one seems to move into first place, and then if we lose, the team that we're playing moves back into first place. So it's been, we've had a lot to do with this other division on who's been the leader, and they're tight. And, you know, what's funny about it, you know, when you talk about Major League Baseball in perspective, is these two teams are also the two probably leading bidders for Manny Machado. Colorado Springs is a Milwaukee affiliate now. I know that sounds crazy because they were a longtime Rockies affiliate. And Oklahoma City is the Dodgers affiliate. So, you know, we're these scouts. And I tell you, the Orioles scouts have been in all of these cities, whether we've been here in Oklahoma City or in New Orleans or Colorado Springs. So I'm telling you, there's more than there's definitely a little more than just the smoke regarding those trade rumors of Manny Machado and where he may land. I think these two affiliates have a lot to do with it.
I see what you just did there because the rumors are Buster Olney this morning saying basically a deal's already in place. And they're just talking about the you know, the medicals and things of that nature. But it really does seem, Tim, like Thursday, Manny Machado will be on a new team. He's going to be playing for the Orioles tonight in the All-Star game, but Buster Olney saying a deal's in place. Pretty much said it's either Dodgers or Phillies, and now you're saying that the Orioles scouts have been in and about it. I don't think that's coincidence for sure. But you and I were kind of talking a little bit about it before the show. The Cubs originally had some interest in Machado, but you think that this is a short-term home wherever Manny goes to?
Well, especially if he ends up in Los Angeles. If he's a Dodger, Corey Seager is in Los Angeles, but he's hurt. He's done for the season. So Manny Machado would fill that role, and, you know, if they can win a World Series with him, I think they would be happy with that, and I think that's why they have a big void with Seager being done for the season. So they would like to have Machado for the rest of the way, try to win it, and then next year Seager would be there, you know, to take his spot, and Manny Machado can go elsewhere. If he ends up in Milwaukee, well, obviously the Brewers, they don't have the kind of money to keep him. You know what I mean? They're one of those hey, we're going to go for it this year. We're going to give up some of our prospects. We're going to try to win the World Series here in 2018. We got the team that is ready to go. Let's go make a big splash and get him Manny Machado. So I think either if he ends up in Milwaukee or Los Angeles, that's not a long-term spot. I've always told you I thought he was going to go to the Cubs. If he ends up in Philadelphia, this is something that I read recently, the people that signed him originally with the Orioles and a lot of his old coaches and all those folks are all now in Philadelphia. So he has a connection there. So it's always possible that he could end up in Philly long term. But I've always thought that this is a guy that the Cubs have their eyes on. I know you've mentioned Bryce Harper because of his connection with Chris Bryant. But I really think Machado's the guy that the Cubs have their long-term plans on. I just don't think they have the prospects to be able to pull it off here, you know, before the trade deadline.
Hey, did you celebrate over the weekend Happy Mike Matheny Day? I know I did.
Yeah, no, I didn't really celebrate. You never like to see a guy getting fired. Plus, you never know how this stuff
yeah,
works.
But if the Cardinals are firing their manager mid-season, Tim, that means they're not doing well.
Well, you know, and that's what I was about to say. You never know how it works. I mean, the last thing I want is for that to light a fire under this Cardinal team and for them to flip a switch and all of a sudden start playing well. So
I didn't think that.
Yeah, that only happens a couple times in baseball. That's something you do in the NBA or the NHL. You know, we see it a lot where they fire a coach and all of a sudden the team starts playing for him. That's not really a baseball move, but I think that's what the Cardinals are doing here. I think St. Louis is like, you know what? This guy did a lot for us. You know, he took over a Tony La Russa team. He led us to a World Series. And every single season, if you look at Mike Matheny's managerial record, every year they've won less games than the season before. And the fact that they've missed the playoffs 2 years in a row, and if the season ends today, they miss the playoffs again, I think St. Louis people who are very serious about their baseball are like, enough's enough. Let's pull the plug now. We're not going to wait till October.
Yeah, that's the point that you just brought up. Every year after they won their World Series, which a lot of people could say won his team, won a part of it, he's won less and less games. But, yeah, look, it is what it is. Cubs, Phillies, and Dodgers lead the NL East, Central, and West over in the AL. Sox 4.5 now over the Yankees in the East. In the Central, Indians lead by 7.5 over Minnesota. In the West, the Astros 5-game lead over Seattle. I want to ask you this, though. We were talking a little bit earlier, and Sharif Eishak's in studio with us today having a little fun. And we're like, who's the face of Major League Baseball? He says faces. I say, you know, it's probably Bryce Harper winning that home run derby yesterday. I'm just thinking, like, marketability, you see him on spots and commercials. Trout, obviously, would be out there as well. Would you say Aaron Judge in the second year? Who are some of the faces you think Major League Baseball has?
You know, Trout's the best player, but you know what I mean? You had to tell me who the best player was. It's Mike Trout. But I think if Mike Trout walked into Lakeside Mall today, I think he could walk from one end to the other and not anybody ask him for his autograph. I don't think people know who he is. I think Aaron Judge, mainly because of his size, you know, he's such a big guy. I think he's pretty much the face in a lot of ways. I think also Trout being in Anaheim kind of lost, you know, with the small, not that Anaheim's a small market, but in a lot of ways it is. They are the little brother to Los Angeles, to the Dodgers in their own city. I think Chris Bryant is well known, you know, and he does, you know, some of those Red Bull commercials and some of those other things. And the fact that it's Cubs, and I think Bryce Harper is pretty well known too. So, I mean, I'd have to say Judge probably is. Obviously, on a night like last night, makes you think Bryce Harper is. But and Bryce has been well known. And I think Bryce and Chris Bryant and Aaron Judge probably are the big three. You know, I think Stanton, you know, because he played so many years with the Marlins and it's not on TV as much, that kind of hurt him. I think this October, you know, if somebody steps up and I think it's what hurts Harper. Harper has been bounced in the first round every time he's gone to the playoffs. A lot of people, especially folks like in New Orleans, they don't watch a lot of regular season baseball. They don't turn it on until October. A lot of people think Major League Baseball starts, you know, October 10th when the playoffs start. And I know that's how it is with the NBA playoffs, too. That's when you need to shine. And I think if Harper ever had a good playoff run, you know, he could take over. Giancarlo Stanton could take over. But, you know, that's the problem with baseball. I think sometimes some of the best players have not made deep runs. And that's why I probably would lean a lot towards Chris Bryant, even though he's very young and he's not been around that long. You know, the fact that he's the face of the Chicago Cubs, and I know they have some other really good players there, but he seems like the guy that, you know, that a lot of people focused on and spotlight on.
Timmy, do you think it hurts Mike Trout because he plays on a not a good team like the Angels, and if he played for the Phillies or maybe the Red Sox or Yankees, he'd be in this discussion right now? I kind of say it's like the whole Anthony Davis thing previous to this past season.
I agree. I think if Mike Trout was a Philadelphia Philly, which I think he's going to be a Philadelphia Philly when this contract runs out, if they don't trade him before that. You know, you saw him this past winter. He went to the Eagles Super Bowl parade. He went to the Eagles Super Bowl. I mean, he's a diehard. He's from New Jersey. He's a diehard Philadelphia guy. I think he's going to be a Philly. And I think when he gets there, and, you know, when the Phillies are built, you know, they're not going to give up the prospects. They're just going to wait their turn to get him, I think. I think he's going to be he will become that face, because at that point we're going to see him on TV more. He's going to be in the Northeast, you know, where, you know, a lot of the cultural guys are, because that's where most of the country looks, or at least maybe, I mean, I guess that's where most of the country looks at. You know what I mean? I know ESPN is centered over there, and they seem to focus on those I-95 teams in, you know, Washington, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, you know, in that whole corridor.
When we talk about baseball and the local guys,
right?
Alex Bregman gets a lot of love. How good is Aaron Nola?
That's
Aaron
good
Nola. If Aaron Nola would win the Cy Young this year, if Max Scherzer wasn't pitching, like I think if it ended this, you know, Max Scherzer is incredible. You know, he won a Cy Young in the American League. He's won two in the National League already. There's not a lot of guys that have won three of those, and he's going to win this year unless something happens. You know. But Aaron Nola has been really good. And this is a guy that I talked to a Marlins scout a few years ago when Aaron was pitching for LSU. And the Marlins had a higher pick. I think they had the 7th pick overall. And Nola went 9th or 10th. And he told me Nola would be a really good number 3, 4, or 5 starter in the big leagues. I think he has shocked a lot of people being a premier ace and being a number one guy.
Now he's, and I want to say he closed out this season, right? Pitching pretty well. I mean, the first half of the season.
Yeah, he's pitched great. The Marlins beat him the other day. Trevor Richards, a guy that pitched earlier this year for the Cakes, actually beat him because he pitched 6 shutout innings, and Nola gave up, I think, 2 runs and lost the ballgame 2-0. But no, Aaron Nola is legit. I mean, he's not just, well, I'm not just piping him up because he's an LSU guy. I mean, or that his brother plays for us. You know, like I said, I think he would be the number if the Cy Young voting came in today, I think he'd finish 2nd to Max Scherzer. And that says a lot. You know, you're beating Kershaw and you're beating Lester and you're beating all these other big names in Major League Baseball. And he's really a big part of the reason why the Philadelphia Phillies are sitting here right now in the playoff picture. You know, I mean, I know they've got some other young guys, but Nola's really led that team to the charge. And I think they got a really good chance to go to the postseason and cause some trouble. I know they're young, and a lot of times these young baseball teams get bounced early. But, you know, when you got a guy like him being your ace, if he continues to pitch at this level, it could be big.
Final question for you. Touch them all. Timmy Grubbs at Mr. Tim Grubbs. The way to follow over on Twitter, voice of the Baby Cakes. Tonight, the All-Star game. Give me a storyline or two to kind of pay attention to and watch here.
Well, you know, obviously Bryce Harper had the big, he stole the spotlight last night. So I don't know. I think maybe he's had a terrible season. You know, I don't know if it's the pressure. He's got a $400 million contract coming his way, or at least he did.
He's batting 214 right now.
He's batting 214, and I don't know if he's going to have to be. I don't know if he's going to get that deal anymore. I don't know if he's going to have to sign a smaller deal or maybe a 2-year deal, kind of do what some of these NBA guys have done recently. You know, you go short-term. You know, put yourself back on the map 2 years from now or a year from now. Maybe you do sign something like that. I think it's possible. You know, obviously J.D. Martinez is having a great year in the American League. He didn't sign last year. He's part of the main reason why the Red Sox have a 4-game lead. If you look at the day he signed, I think he signed on like March 3rd or something. You know, early March, you wouldn't think that. You couldn't imagine, you know, a franchise quarterback, you know, going into free agency and not signing until training camp starts. And that's what happened with J.D. Martinez, who's had a great year. That's what might happen with Bryce Harper. I wouldn't be surprised he was to wait it out. There's not that many teams that got that much money, but I think he now if he has a great second half, this could be a mute conversation we're having. But I think he's the guy. I think it's his town, at least for the time being. You know, and I think he had a great night last night. Let's see what he does tonight.
Crazy when you think of $400 million in a contract awaiting from that perspective, man. Tim, enjoy the game. Doubleheader over at Oklahoma City. And then, of course, the Cakes will come back next Tuesday for a couple of games. In the meantime, he'll be on the road. Follow him over on Twitter, Mr. Tim Grubbs. He loves to tweet during road games as well. Feel free to follow. He tweets pictures of the stadiums and the games. And we always appreciate your time on Tuesdays with us, man.
No problem, Gus, and maybe I'll be able to break some news. I think Machado may get traded tomorrow. They don't want to do that before the All-Star game. They want him to wear that Orioles. But if I see a player leave the game today for the Dodgers, he's probably heading there. So we'll see. And then I'll keep you updated on your Cubs prospects this weekend.
There we go. Yes, Iowa over the weekend. That's right. Hey, look, I believe me, I'm as shocked as anybody that we're sitting here at the All-Star break. How many times did I declare them on our segment the season over? Three, right?
It's at least three.
At least three, and they have the best record in the National League.
We also wrote off the Dodgers early in the year, too. You and I both were like, they're looking like they're done.
But yeah.
Now, the Dodgers have done something historic. They're the first team to go from 10 games under 500 to 10 games over 500. It's the quickest team to go from 10 games under 500.
Shockingly, how to continue to do that, Tim. Shockingly, right? Muncy yesterday, shockingly, starts in AAA, and the guy's hitting home runs at a pace that Hank Aaron hadn't hit. Shocking how they keep finding those guys. And no, I'm not calling for an investigation just yet.
It's incredible, though. Max Muncy was at the Shrine on Airline in April.
I know.
300.
Yep, exactly. Now, miraculously, every 10 at-bats, I heard last night in the Home Run Derby, he's hitting a home run. That's shockingly how that happens over there in Dodgerland.
Mm-hmm. Every year the Dodgers hit on somebody that was a has-been with some other organization.
I need that strength coach is all I'm saying. Whoever runs that program, hook it up.
Or work out with me, Gus.
Or work out with Sharif Aisha. Thank you, bud. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, have fun.
All right, there he goes. We'll get back into our football chatter here. We'll come back. Seriously, though, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, every year, whether it's Cody, Bell, I mean, name a guy, they just come in and just bombs away. I mean, that World Series last year was something else.
Whew.
I mean, seriously, Dodgers Astros was something else last year.
Pray for ratings.
You couldn't turn off the game.
Bomb after bomb.
Dude, ninth inning bombs. I mean, it was crazy. It really was a good World Series. All right, Sports Hangover continues. Gus Cattingale, Sharif Aishak joining us today on this Tuesday in the Metairie studios. Joey, how are things over there in La Rose? Still good?
Good.
Okay, because earlier this morning, Joey the intern, remember Joey was a little worried about the weather. It could be coming here. Huh? What now?
Turn your mic on.
Yeah, there you go.
That would help Jordan the intern.
Come on. Gus is supposed to do that for me.
That's right.
You're at the stage of your career.
Yep. I always point to him like, that's your mic. That's your headset. That's my mic.
Exactly.
Get your finger off of my mic.
I know which ones are which.
Uh-huh. See what I got to deal with over here?
Pay him more. Might be able to pay attention.
Thank you.
The insubordination. All right. So we've been talking a little bit about the SEC Media Days. You were there yesterday in Atlanta as well over in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Awesome place.
So we've touched on the quarterback. We've touched on the receivers, running backs. Played a lot of the sound from Coach O. The three players that LSU brought.
Shar Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
Foster Moreau,
mm-hmm.
Devin White.
Mm-hmm.
Devin White.
Okay. I said it when you first walked in, is he the star at LSU right now? Is he like the guy, it's the Fournette, he's the guy?
Yeah. He grabs your attention when you talk to him.
Right.
So yeah, it's him.
Okay, it's him, right? I mean, again.
Very likable.
Burrows can come in and light it up. People love the quarterback position stuff, but there's a lot of unknown at receiver. Talent, unknown. And literally, Coach O just said it's three running backs. So, yep. But he's a guy that has NFL star written on him.
133 tackles a season ago.
Right. Here's what Coach O had to say about him, and then we'll talk about what he had to say since you had a chance to talk to him.
A tremendous character. And you brought up a good point. He leads the locker room. After I lost to Troy last year, Devin White became a vocal leader, along with Rashard Lawrence and other people. He's the reason that we got to turn around our season last year along with his teammates. So he's done it before. He's prepared to do it this year. We have a very challenging schedule. That's why you come to LSU to play the best. We have to start very fast, and Devin is ready to lead this team to great things.
I think leadership was probably one of the more important things that I liked hearing from Coach O say that. People can say it doesn't matter, and you and I have talked about this, that I say an X factor this year for LSU success is not you, but you, the fans listening out there. How you act, how you tweet, how you interact with this team, it matters. I mean, I think it matters in recruiting. I think it absolutely matters with kids' psyche and things of that nature. You've talked to kids before, I'm sure, that said, you know, they hear what people tweet or say about them. Some quarterbacks past in the past have said it as well. And if things get tough, how does it go? You know, like, he's a bum. Get rid of him. Start this guy. Start that. So when the season starts the way it does last year and you lose to Troy, not that players don't have leadership or look at it from a head coach standpoint, but they see it. Just like you see it, I see it. They hear the talk shows. You got Matt in Baton Rouge saying, this guy shouldn't have been hired. I mean, you hear that. Doubt from everywhere. So I thought it was important that somebody in that locker room actually took ownership of the team.
He's the right guy. The right guy. I mean, says the right things, does the right things. You talk about a guy who wants to be perfect at his craft. I mean, that's all he talked about yesterday was being making sure that, hey, I don't miss tackles. I know I made 133.
He said that was an issue with him last year.
Nah, he's like, I might have led the SEC in tackles, but this season I have to work on not missing tackles because there were some tackles that he said he missed that, you know, led the first down in big plays. So, you know, he might be up for the Buckus Award. I think that's how good he is this year in his junior year. He's intelligent on and off the field, a good leader, as Coach O said, and you know, that's somebody you really need on your side. You know, you don't really worry about the defense because you have a rando who's not really a talker, you know, who's like a genius, the professor. Then you have the guys that he has on the field, you know, the Lawrences and, you know, the Whites and even back there, Grant Delpit and Greedy Williams. So Devin White is going to be just fine, and I like him as the face and leader of this team, probably on both sides of the ball.
You've referenced it several times. The next hour we'll focus on the Saints, maybe a little Pels here as well, but you referenced AD a lot. Coach Gentry, you need somebody on the floor. I know Rondo sort of did as well, but we saw towards the end of last year, we can make the case in Army, we'll touch on next hour, AD and Drew kind of taking that next step of ownership of the team. This is my locker room, getting on players. You heard AD in that interview with Rachel Nichols in the playoffs saying, no, getting to the playoffs isn't good enough, and sometimes you have to get on your teammates. You have to have a guy. Sean Payton says it all the time, too, with the Saints. Not only Drew Brees, but pick a position group. There's a leader. Like, we see it.
Yeah.
And he talks about it. There's a Jordan's got, he calls them my guys, the D-line. AJ Klein walked in last year. The defense kind of followed him, right? In the secondary, you're sort of seeing maybe some of the young guys take over, but Kurt Coleman has another guy coming in. But you can just see how some of the leadership, you have to have players that take ownership and lead on in your locker room. It can't just be the head coach.
And let me tell you, that's going to be even more important this year for LSU.
Knowing who's that on offense? Right?
Don't know yet.
I mean, who's
maybe
that
Foster.
Offense?
It's probably Foster.
Say, is it Foster.
It's Foster
Morrow. Because he went there, right? I mean, went to media day, so.
It's him on offense. I mean, they don't have many pieces coming back on offense. You're going to have to, you know.
But you lost 13 starters.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
You have to lean on your tight end, senior tight end, to be that leader, to keep everything together, because you don't know what the offense is going to look like with a lot of new faces. So you want to make sure that you have someone there who could, you know, keep everyone cool, calm, and collected. And what's going to be a very rough schedule, tough season, man. That's a lot of tough teams they're playing. You know, with a lot of the unknowns, you're going to need somebody like Foster on offense. Defense,
right.
I don't really worry about the defense with Dave Aranda and what he does. So I think they'll be just fine on defense.
We'll put a wraps here on Coach O and LSU here after this next one, because I'm going to ask you next segment when we come back after this break. What's the game on the schedule? What's the game on the schedule you're looking forward to the most to kind of seeing, whether it's just a battle, whether it's just fun, whether it's just a rivalry? Is it still Alabama? I asked that to Marlon Favorite yesterday, and he said it's still Bama for him. I think it's Florida, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back, because Coach O had this to say about Bama and this to say about Florida. So we'll touch on that with Sharif Fashak from Channel 6 WDSU Sports. And then next hour, we'll focus a little bit on Los Santos. Mitchell Lowen, saving the day yesterday. How crazy was that?
I know. I saw that story. Read it. I read it, and I saw that Fletcher tweeted it, and right. I was like, that's pretty
nuts.
Awesome.
So we'll touch on that, and then kind of what some of the storylines you're already thinking of doing here. It's hard to believe, dude. I haven't mentioned it, but yes, tomorrow, the rookies report for camp.
And then 1 week.
A week from tomorrow, the vets report for camp. So,
and then our lives are over.
Yeah, we'll still start touching on some of the storylines here that we'll be focusing on. And what I think, I'm already calling it the NBA's Western Conference, the NFC. I mean, that really is.
The NFC South?
Yeah, just the NFC.
The NFC South.
I just think the NFC. Well, we'll get into that next hour. We'll start getting into some NFL talk. So Sports Hangover, Hour 2, wraps up next on ESPN New Orleans. In the past, when Les Miles had SEC Media Days, Sharif Eishak, a lot of the questions would be about Alabama.
Real quality football team.
Yep. Like the Bang Heads. Real physical. I miss Coach Miles sometimes.
Miles-isms were awesome.
It's great. I'll say this. Here's O on two games. He's gotten to coach against Alabama, right? I mean, last year, I liked him after the loss last year going, we're coming for you. You know what I mean? I hear you, but you got to back it up. Hey, I don't know if he saw a different game than me, but here's the question and his response when he was asked. On his two battles in Alabama, what did you learn from those two battles? What can you take away from it?
Yeah, I think each game is different. Like when you look at that first game, it was 0-0 going into the fourth quarter, and we toe-to-toe with them. Their quarterback made some very good plays. You got to give him credit. They hung in there. We didn't finish the game. Like if you look at last year's game at Alabama, it was a physical contest. We felt that we could handle them physically and compete with them. And that was the first time I think our players felt that in a while. We missed some plays. We had DJ Chark open. We didn't hit him. Their passing game gave us problems. And their quarterback made plays, and we didn't. Give Coach Saban and his staff the credit. They won the football game. Almost is not good enough against Alabama. But we feel that a couple of plays here and there and continue to be physically, we're going to be right in there with them.
Play here or there, Sharif? I mean, that's what he said. Why are you giving me the look? It's a play here or there. If Chark makes that catch, it's...
What was the final score?
But it's a play here or there, though. That's what he said.
I can't remember the final
score. I got
score.
You, Sharif.
Thanks. 10-0 a couple years ago, right?
Yes. Right.
They maybe play here or there.
Jalen Hurts, yes. I would agree.
I would say more in that game than last year's game in Tuscaloosa. I mean, yeah, you hit DJ Chark.
I thought last year's game... He saw it as they were toe-to-toe physically. I thought they were absolutely
outmatched.
Clear. Yes.
Outmatched last season. Yeah. There's a reason why they won a national
Which
championship.
It's crazy because he said that was the closest he thought they'd been.
24-10.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
I didn't.
I saw that national championship game as well, and that scared me. If I was an LSU fan watching Georgia and Alabama last year go at it with the amount of freshmen that were on that field, because that title game was a different level of football than I see. A lot of teams play in college football, not just LSU. So let's see if Georgia and Alabama come back, Sharif, that strong this year. I do think the SEC East, it'll be a little tough. It'll be interesting this year. Florida with Dan Mullen, let's see what he can maybe sort of do. I know they're trying to make that LSU-Florida rivalry. He was asked, is it intensifying?
Well, from what I know, me being from Louisiana and my history with LSU, it's always been an intense rivalry. So whether it's intense or not because of those circumstances, I can't say. But I'll tell you what, it's about as intense a rivalry we have, and we respect the University of Florida, and we look forward to going to play a very good Florida team at Gainesville again this year.
17-16, the score a year ago, Sharif. And look, with McMillan there, right, fired, McElwain, not McMillan, jeez. But McElwain, it was just a war of words. I mean, he loved poking the tiger, poking the bear there. And I loved it. To me, it was like the intensifying of rivalry, and I saw it. I still think it's going to be an interesting game Saturday, October 6th at Gainesville. So that's the game I'm kind of interested in because Dan Mullen, he always played LSU well. And he did really well at Mississippi State. It's got better athletes, supposedly, right? A little better environment. Let's see. I mean, he had a great line today at Media Days where he said, hey, I'm opposite of Donald Trump. I'm trying to not drain the swamp. I'm trying to pack the swamp as all the home games are sold out. They weren't last year. So a lot of excitement going into that. I think that could be an interesting game. Is it Georgia for you or is it still Alabama?
I'm kind of – only reason why I'm kind of getting tired of the Alabama game because you know what's going to happen. Until LSU beats Alabama, it's you know what's going to happen. So I'm going to move on to something else. I'm going to give you two games.
Okay.
Georgia. I like Georgia because it's coming to Tiger Stadium. I feel like they only play in Tiger Stadium, what, every 12 years,
right.
I feel like.
Uh-huh.
So knowing how close they were to winning the national championship, Jake Fromm, pretty good quarterback.
All they did was go get the best quarterback in the recruiting class.
All they do is get a good quarterback. Uh-huh. So I'm interested to see them play in Tiger Stadium. I think that's going to be a pretty good game. For some reason, I think that might be one they can steal. I might be crazy, but that could be one they steal. And at the end of the season, in College Station, of course.
That's
the game that's I really want to see.
Bring up.
I want to see that game more than anything because the so-called maybe LSU head coach a few years ago in Jimbo Fisher versus
and that's
Coach
what I'm saying.
O. Because that's the measuring stick. Everyone's going to measure him up.
That's what I was going to say. Is that going to be the rivalry?
I think so. I think it's going
to
become
the
new rivalry.
Especially, let's say, if those two keep battling to be the second-best team in the West and they're keeping each other from there, right? Because here's the thing, too. If Coach O keeps winning but constantly keeps losing to Texas A&M, he could be – like we've seen history in the past, Ohio State, Michigan, where both coaches have had success against everybody else but tends to lose to that school, they get fired. You know, it's like I could see a situation where Coach O could win but lose to Bama which, and keep losing to A&M. Like if he goes – you know, whatever in two in the SEC every year, those two losses happen to be Alabama and A&M, it could get them fired.
It could, yeah, because that's the measuring stick every year.
That's what I'm saying.
For me, of course, a rivalry has to mean the other side has to win. What Alabama is to LSU, LSU is to Texas A&M. They haven't beaten LSU, and LSU hasn't beaten Alabama here, so something has to happen. We have to have a switch here eventually.
Last game of the year. First one, of course, the opener against Miami. I see some people put Miami at... like number 5 in the country, number 3 in the country.
That should be an interesting one. I wouldn't be shocked if LSU won that game.
Really?
Field goal underdog. Might surprise you.
All right. That's Sunday, September 2nd.
Prime time.
The week after
Jerry's
that.
World.
The Saints kick off the regular season. Let's talk a little bit about the black and gold. We come back. Sharif Eishak joining us today in studio. It's the Sports Hangover. We'll be back with our number 3 next on ESPN New Orleans.